All right, we're beginning here on the top of Yud Dalet Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. Beit Shammai Omrim, Tavlin Nidochim Be'Madoch Kshaleitz. That you can pound spices with a pestle made out of wood. Va'melach, but salt, Be'Pach, either inside of a Kli Cheres, inside of an earthenware vessel, U'Be'Eitz Parur, and with a wooden ladle or spoon. Bitilomim, tavlini dochin kidarkan, bimadoch shaleven. Spices one can crush in a normal manner with a stone pestle. Bamelach, mimadoch shaleit. And the salt with a wooden pestle is implying that melach or salt requires some sort of shinui, even according to Beit Hillel. Where spices can be done in a normal manner, salt requires some sort of change in the activity. So, v'kuli amma mihat melach b'yishinui. So the Gemara asks right away that even Beit Hillel agrees, not to the extent that Beit Shammai says it, but at least in some form or fashion, one has to make a change in the way that they crush the salt. These are actually large granules of salt, and they're crushing them down into finer granules of salt to be utilized, whether it's in cooking or on the food that's being served. Rav Huna v'Rav Chista. So they want to give the reason why this is the requirement. All dishes require salt. Not all dishes require spices. Therefore, if one was anticipating their needs on Yom Tov, they would of course need salt. Salt is a given, and therefore they should have done it before Yom Tov because they know they need it. Spices, on the other hand, nobody knows what they're going to cook on Yom Tov. They're not certain of the dishes they're going to cook on Yom Tov. And because of that, they don't know which spices they're going to need. So the spices are more spontaneous, something that they might do or make on Yom Tov. Charamar kol tavlin mafigin taman, that all other spices lose their potency. Umelach ena mafiga tama. On the other hand, salt stays at its full potency even after it's been crushed. So there's no loss in doing the salt early, before Yom Tov, because you crush it, Erev Yom Tov, you crush it on Yom Tov, it'll still taste the same either way. Whereas with spices, you crush them on Erev Yom Tov. By the time you get to Yom Tov, they've lost some of that potency. You know, you do some Kharin when it's fresh, versus you do it a day later, then it's not as fresh, not as powerful. Whereas salt, it makes no difference. When you do it either on Erev Yom Tov or Yom Tov, you're going to have the same result in terms of its ability to flavor. So my benayu, what is the nafkamina between these two reasons? Ike benayu diyada maik de rabai levushule. He already has his menu set out. Then, obviously in that case, for the according to the reason that he didn't know what he's going to cook, therefore he didn't know what spice he needs, that's not true. Now he does know what he's going to cook, so he knows what spice is, and he can anticipate and do that beforehand. Whereas according to the one who says that the flavor is going to be lost, it's irrespective of whether you know the dish or not, because even if you know the dish, it's going to lose some of its potency afterwards. Inami bimorika. Or the other possibility is with spices that do not lose their tam. There are certain spices that are equally potent, whether you do it on Erev Yom Tov or on Yom Tov. Rashi gives the example here of tavlin shemorika. Ika meinau sheish kdeira shemit tavlim ota bikarkom. Is saffron. So he says certain items that you spice with saffron, ve'enu mefig tamo, doesn't lose its flavor, doesn't lose its potency if you do it early. There are a category of spices that do not lose their potency if you do it early, and he didn't know what he was going to make. So according to the Lishna Kama, you won't have to do any change because he still didn't know what he was going to make, so it doesn't matter whether it loses its potency or not. According to the second time, he could have done it earlier because it would have been to no detriment in order to do that. This is actually an important factor in Yom Tov itself. The whole permission or permissibility of cooking on Yom Tov is because something fresh is better than something that is not fresh. And so we permit you to cook on Yom Tov because fresh food is much better than food that is made the day before and then reheated on that day. That has important implications because today we might be somewhat indifferent to that. Most food that we eat on Yom Tov has already been cooked prior to Yom Tov, and then we just reheat it in order that the women don't spend their whole Yom Tov cooking. So, but that might change the dynamic of the permissibility of cooking on Yom Tov. Rav Schechter mentions that possibly today we would not be permitted to cook on Yom Tov because most Yom Tovs, even if you make something that is better fresh, nevertheless you make it before and then reheat it because it's just much more convenient, much easier. It makes the Yom Tov more pleasant. You can reheat like you would on Shabbat, but you may not let it cook.
On the day
Right. So in those instances, you're right. In certain instances, like liquids, where on Shabbat, you can't bring them to a Yad Zoledet bo, and so there's clearly a difference between Shabbat and Yom Tov there, it would seem that it's fine. But in a case like we have chicken, that all you're doing is you're not bringing it to a boil, you're simply reheating it on Shabbat, you're reheating it on Yom Tov, you reheat it, it would give you the equal result, then maybe over there you wouldn't be able to cook the chicken because you're just as happy having the chicken cooked the day before and then eating on that day. So there might be some change in the dynamic. Of course, refrigeration is a big part of why that's the case, that we cook beforehand and we're able to utilize it on that day. But it may change the ability of one to cook on Yom Tov because you are indifferent. As opposed to them, there was a differentiation for them. You may be indifferent today between having it cooked on Yom Tov versus cooked the day before. Right, but the qualification is not the objective standard, it's your subjective standard, which is that, are you makbid, that all your food on Yom Tov is made fresh? Alright, Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel, kol nidochin, nidochin kedarkan, vafilu melach. That anything can be pounded, can be crushed in the normal manner, even salt. So here you have an opinion which seems to clearly be against everything we've said until now, which is that they do need to have differentiation. Vahamart, did you just say, melach ba'ishinui? Doesn't you just tell us that even according to Beit Hillel, salt requires some sort of differentiated crushing on Yom Tov? Huda Marki Haitano. There are other Tanaim here, not necessarily the Tanaim of our Mishnah, but the Tanya in a bright Tom, Rabbi Meir. Unechluku Beit Shammai u Beit Hillel nidochim shinidochim kedarkan u melach imahem. Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel do not argue that all spices and salt with them can be crushed in the normal manner. That's only if you're doing it alone. Beit Shammai omrim melach bepach ubeitz porur. Beit Shammai says in that case you have to do a significant shinui, which is to do it in an earthenware utensil and with the wooden spoon or ladle. Let's sleep. And not only do you have to do it in that unusual manner, you can only do it in quantities that are small. Remember we said this the other day that for roasting they put on much less salt than they did for cooking in a normal manner. So here you can only do it in small quantities and in a differentiated manner. Avalolik deira, not for a normal dish, which would require larger quantities. Betelomim b'chol davar, any way you want. So now Gemara says b'chol davar salgadatcha. You think any way you want, you can even use a kli shemalachto the isur, which would be impermissible even to lift. But you can do b'chol davar. Elaim alichol davar, not b'chol davar. You can't use any utensil you please, but rather you can make it for any reason. Which means not only for tzli, but even for regular cooking for kedera, even quantities for the kedera. And as Rashi points out, Tosafot seconds this, it also means that you can do it in the normal manner. You can crush the salt in the normal manner, even though that's not explicitly said here in the words of Beit Hillel. Rashi states that this is the normal structure of lo nechluku ela bi. So lo nechluku means they don't argue except in this case. Oh, the case where they didn't argue has to be parallel to the case where they do argue, which is one person continuously has the same position all the way through. So here before, Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai agreed that when you do the spices and the salt together, that not necessarily simultaneously, that can be one after the other, but you're doing it sequentially and you're doing them all together, not physically together, but in a single kitchen preparation, then that's permissible to do it in the normal manner. Then they say they argue about salt. So then somebody has to have the original opinion and somebody disagree with it. So Beit Hillel has the original opinion, which is kid darko. You do it in the normal manner, means completely normal manner. And the only question between them and Beit Shammai is Beit Shammai requires a change in the manner plus a change in the quantity. Beit Hillel requires no change in quantity as well as no change in the manner that you do it. You can do it the normal way. And that's who Amar Rabbi Yehuda Shmuel is relying on. This Tano, Rabbi Meir explains Machloket Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai in this way. And obviously, they're subscribing to the position of Beit Hillel, according to Rabbi Meir. Amar le Rav Acha Bardula Librei. Rav Acha Bardula said to his son, or there are others who suggest that Girsa here is Amar le Rav, the Rav Acha Bardula. That was Rav saying it to Rav Acha Bardula. Ki daichit atzle atzluye v'doch. When you crush the salt, do me a favor. Tip the pestle and mortar to the side. Don't do it in the normal vertical manner, but do it in a horizontal manner. A very small shinui, but do at least this little small shinui. Rav Sheshet Shama Kol Buchna, he heard the noise of a pestle working. That's definitely not coming from my house, because I told the people in my house not to do that. I told them they have to do it on the side, not in the normal manner. V'dilma atzluye atzle. How does he know that it wasn't from his house? Maybe they were following his instructions, and they were doing it on the side. How does he know that when he heard the sound, that it was definitely vertical, the normal way that you do it? V'shame dave tzalil kale. Because he heard that the sound from the pounding was either very shrill or very clear. So he knew that it was done in the normal manner. When you put it on its side, the pounding sound is dull because you're doing it on the side of the pestle and mortar, you're doing it on its side, versus when you do it in the vertical, which gives a much more shrill or loud or clear sound. V'dilma tavlin havel. As you know, it was salt. Maybe it was spices, which you're allowed to do in a normal manner. Even Rav Sheshet agrees that you can do the pounding of spices in a totally normal manner. So how does he know that it was salt and that the sound meant they were doing it in an upright manner, which was problematic, versus spices that they were doing in an upright manner, which is permissible? Tavle nevuche minabach talayhu. When it comes to spices, they dull the sound because they're not as sharp or strong, so the pounding sound is dulled by the spices when you're crushing them. So the fact that he heard the sound in a certain manner, obviously they were attuned to these sounds because they used them all the time. So he knew that that was the sound of a pestle mortar being used upright for salt and not for either spices or on its side. And that's why he said it couldn't be coming from my house. Tosafot's interesting over here. Tosafot says, Pasak ri, that the ri was posak here, sheish le'asor b'chol inyan, tazlin in the chumrah. That we go to chumrah, meaning that we had two opinions as to why one has to do something the day before. Four, and not on Yom Tov itself. And if you do on Yom Tov, you need a shinoi. One was because we don't know what dishes you have, and the other one is because of mefig tam, the problem that the spices lose their taste. So he says, over here, you should go to chumrah. Af agav debishel sofrim halacha chara mekiel. Over here, it's only a din derabbanan. And a din derabbanan, you'd normally go after the kula opinion. Nevertheless, over here, hol v'chol echad v'chad yesh kula v'chumrah, mikol tzad av din and the chumrah. He says, because you can't subscribe to one of the opinions, because each one of the opinions comes with two sides to it. Each opinion has a chumrah to it and a kula to it. And we just saw that. We said, Ika benayu, the differences between them, you have a kula and a chumrah in each position. And therefore, you can't say, always go to kula, because going to the kula doesn't tell you which one to pick. And if you always pick the kula of both of them, then you basically have said that neither of them apply, which is not the way to go to kula, because then you haven't picked an opinion. So therefore, we end up going to chumrah with both of them, because that's the only way that you end up picking both opinions and dealing with both opinions. Mihu, he says, nevertheless, shumin, garlic, mutar the taknam bi yom tov. You can crush them and make them on yom tov, because miyaseu tamir of yom tov, because if you make them early, they lose their tam. Mefigim tamu mekalkulim bi yoter. They have significant loss in being done from erev yom tov, and therefore even garlic, even if you know you can use garlic in your dishes, you can still do it beforehand, because it has such a significant deterioration between the 2 days. You still require probably a little shinoi, some small shinoi. Omiyo, I pisco, no lofka la mide. Anyway, that psak halacha of the ri is irrelevant. You know why? Taikaim alonke Shmuel, v'samuch. We basel like Shmuel. Tuchol ani nidochim, nidochim kedarkan. You can crush everything in the normal manner. It says, v'chein pasak rav alfas. That's the way the riff paskins. It's not uncommon, but not so common that Tosafot quotes the Rif. Well, there's certain times you see there Tosafot quoting the Rif. Here is one of the cases where he quotes the Rif. Chaim pasach Rabbi Yehuda Igon, and he says Rabbi Yehuda Igon also paskins that way, like Shmuel. Bichein yesh minhag alacha lemaseh. So he says that that's the minhag alacha lemaseh, that everybody does this, which is that everybody crushes their spices in a normal manner. Mikol makom asur litchon pilpilim berechaim shlehem. Nevertheless, you can't crush peppers in their meal. Because then it looks like a weekday activity. So you're asking about the garlic press. Unlikely that you could use the garlic press for the same reason, that it's uvda dechol. Can't do. We try to change some, just small change that indicates that it's yom tov. Nevertheless, afterwards, he says that maybe we could come up with a heter for pilpilim. Because if you didn't know you were going to use them in a pot the next day, they lose their flavor from day to day. Maybe you could do it. Then he writes at the end, very interesting line in Tosafot. I've never seen this before in Tosafot. He says, "V'amachmir l'duchan me'erev yom tov." Someone is machmir to crush them from erev yom tov. Here he's talking about the peppers, but I'm sure he meant other spices that don't lose their time as well. He should be blessed by God and by the ineffable name of God, which is very interesting. We have a b'machmir tavo l'bracha. That's normally the phrase that you see in many of the poskim. Here he has a much more enhanced, embellished version of that, which is he should be barech belukim u'b'shem ha'miyuchad. Phrase I've never seen before in Tosafot, just very interesting. Again, here he says that the machmir, if you can crush and do this beforehand in large quantities, in commercial quantities, so you can do it large quantities beforehand and then have it available for yourself, as opposed to on Yom Tov, where you only have to do small quantities and for exactly what you need, better to do it beforehand as long as you're not going to lose a lot by doing that. You're not going to lose a lot of the flavoring. Even if you don't know which dishes you're going to make, try to have a general selection of spices that are available to you. All right, now, Tanra Banan. Enusim tisni. So now it says you can't make pearl barley. So Rashi explains now, this is barley that's crushed so much that it splits into four pieces. Each grain splits into four pieces. Means you can't put them through the mill. Tarte, the Gemara says, why are you telling me the same thing twice? You're telling me you can't make this barley that's crushed so heavily, plus you can't put it into the mill. That sounds like the same thing. Just tell me you can't put it in the mill, and then I know you can't make the tisni. So, hachi kamar, matam. It's the reason. Eino sim tisni. Why can't you make this tisni? V'shein konchim b'makdeshet. Because you can't use the mill on Yom Tov, therefore you can't make tisni. Kamar says, so then, v'leima in konchim b'makdeshet. Just say, don't use the mill, and you would know that you can't make tisni. So, itani in konchim b'makdeshet, hava mina, I would have thought, hani mila makdeshet gidola. Because a stam mill is a large mill. So I thought it was only true in a large mill. Only in large mills, you can't be a makdeshet. But of a makdeshet ktana, in a small mill, emesh shabir dami. In the hand mill or a small mill, maybe you could do it. Mashmalon, that neither are permissible. Vatanya, don't we have a brighta in kochim be makdeshet gdola, aval kochim be makdeshet ktana? Don't we exactly have that diuk, which is, you're not allowed to use the large mill, but you can use the small mill? Amar Abaye, Kitanya, Nami, Matnita, B'machteshet Gidola, Tanya. Our Braita also is talking about a large mill. So now, you have to re-explain it. So then, according to Abaye, what happened here? Abaye is saying there's two statements in our Braita. First statement in our Braita is, Enosim Tisni. You can't make this Tisni because it's a Tircha Yitewa. It's an extra effort that is unnecessary on Yom Tov to split it into four pieces of the grain. Therefore, you can't do it in a large mill or a small mill. You're completely restricted from making tisni. Second din is, in mishtamshim b'machteshet. You can't use the machteshet, in kochim b'machteshet. That's only a machteshet gdola. With other items, you may not use the large mill, you may use the small mill. So according to Abaye, there are two dinim. Tisni is out legamre, because that's a tircha she'ena tzricha, or tircha yeteira, which is, we don't want you engaged in. And secondarily, any other item, if you can put in a mill, you can't put it in a large mill, you can only put it into a small mill. That's the way Abaye answers the stira between the braitot, and therefore both braitot now are saying there's only a restriction against using large mills, not against using small mills. And tisni, on the other hand, is completely out. That is a problem no matter what, because of the tircha meruba. It's extra effort that we don't want you exerting or engaging in on Yom Tov. I mean that the large mills give you large quantities, and most people would use them because for the effort that you exert, you get much more out of it. But that means that you're making it not only for today, you're making it for longer range, and we said before that that's not permitted on Yom Tov. Small mill gives you exactly that, small results. It's much more effort for the small result, but that's all we're going to permit you to do, and it's not as fine. The other thing is that it's not as heavy, it won't give you as fine a result as you have with the larger mill. All right, Rava Amar Lokasha, Halon Aluhu. Difference is, halan halahu, whenever we say that in the Gemara, halan for us in Bavel, halahu for Eretz Yisrael. And every time it's a guess, which one is for Eretz Yisrael, which one is for Bavel. Here Rashi explains that halan for us in Bavel, we're allowed to use the small mills and not the large mills. In Eretz Yisrael, they're not allowed to use either types of mills. Why is that? Rashi explains, because we don't have servants, the people in Eretz Yisrael have servants. People in Eretz Yisrael have servants, so what do the servants say? We did it with the small mill, and then they go ahead and do it with the large mill. They're not trustworthy with regards to these items, and they'll go and do it what's easier for them. They'll go and do a large mill, take care of large quantities, and just say, yeah, we did it in a small mill. So since they're not trustworthy, then they restricted all milling whatsoever. But on the other hand, when it comes to Bavel, where they didn't have servants, and the people themselves were engaged in it, then they did the right thing. They did the small mills, and didn't do the large mills. So Rapapi Iklo the Beimar Shmuel. So he went to the house of Beimar Shmuel. Aitele Daisa, Vloachal. They brought out to him Daisa, and he refused to eat it. Now, daisa is basically the same thing as this tisni that we saw before, but it's just not as crushed. It's not as well worked over. So you have the tisni, which is split into four pieces. The daisa is crushed less than that. And that should be permissible, according to what we've said until now. All right, so they brought him some sort of farina porridge. Why was he so suspicious? Maybe they made it in a small mill, and it would have been fine. The chaz you have the daik tfei. He saw it was too fine. So that's one of the differentiations that we spoke about before between the Makteshet Gdola and Makteshet Ktana. Not only is it for large quantities, but it gives you a much finer product than the smaller one. So by definition, the smaller one is a shinoi, which is why it's permitted on Yom Tov. Maybe they did it the day before. How do you know? He saw that it was very white and fresh. He was able to notice from the freshness of the farina that it clearly wasn't done the day before. It was done today. V'ibay deima, shani beimar Shmuel, de'ika pritzuta de'avde. Even though Shmuel was in Bavel, and we said before the difference between Halah and Halahu was the difference between Bavel and Eretz Yisrael, because in Eretz Yisrael they had the Avadim, and in Bavel they did not. Shmuel, who was a leader with Rosh Yeshiva, and again in a hierarchical society, he had servants. And so therefore in Shmuel's house, or Beis Shmuel, they had tons of servants, and therefore it had the same din as Eretz Yisrael, which is we won't permit it whatsoever because of the fear that these servants are not going to listen, they're going to do what's convenient rather than what's halakhically correct. And because of that, he refused to eat it when he went to the Beit Midrash, or to the house of Shmuel. Alright, next Mishnah. Borer, as we mentioned before, that Borer is permissible on Yom Tov as opposed to on Shabbat. Borer is restricted on Shabbat, Borer on Yom Tov is permissible as long as you're not doing it in a professional manner, we'll call it. Otherwise, it's fine. A borer kitniyot be yom tov, one who sorts legumes on yom tov. Beit Shemai omrim borer ochel v'ochel. Right, one is the noun and one is the verb. Right, so first of all, he separates out the food from the psolet, and then v'ochel, and then he can eat it. Beit Hillel omrim borer kidarko. He can do it in a normal manner, b'cheko, in his lap, b'knon. He can use either a funnel or a reed basket, u'betamchui, or with a plate. Avalo b'tavla, not with a tray, v'lo b'nafeh, not a sifter, v'lo b'kvara, not a sieve. So here you see the differentiation. You can do normal borer. Normal borer is taking out the psolet from the ochel. You remove that which is bad from the ochel. So Beit Hillel allows you to do this on Yom Tov, even though it's restricted on Shabbat, he allows you to do it on Yom Tov, but he only allows you to do it in small quantities again, and not in a professional manner. You can't use a knon, you can't use a tavla, nafer, kvara, which are used for large quantities, and do a great job. The smaller ways that you do with small quantities and less efficient ways, those are permissible to do on Yom Tov. So a small shinoi, but the borer is permitted. Gamliel says you can soak them, float the chaff to the top, and then skim it off the top, and that's totally fine. Tanya, Amar Rabban Gamliel, Bamed Dvarim Amurim, this is in the position of Beit Hillel. When is that said? Sha'ochel miruba ala psolet. As long as there's more food than there is psolet. So as long as there's more food than psolet, then it makes sense to pull the psolet out and leave the food. Aval psolet miruba ala ochel. On the other hand, if there's more psolet than ochel, divrei hakol, even Beit Hillel will agree, notela to ochel, umeniach at psolet. Better to take out the ochel than take out the psolet because of the unnecessary effort that you're going to have to make to do it the other way. Where it says, wait a minute, psolet, meruba, ala ochel, mi kaman deshori. If you have more psolet than ochel, who's going to allow you to pick it up in the first place? It's muksin. Because the ochel is batel to the psolet. And therefore, it becomes just like a big bowl of psolet, which everybody agrees is muksa. It has no use on Yom Tov or Shabbat. And now you're picking up muksa. Nobody would allow that. Lo tzricha, denofish betircha v'zutar b'shi'ura. So no, the cases here is where it takes more effort, even though it's less of it. The question here is an exertion or an effort issue, which is that we assume that psolet is very fine. If the psolet is very fine, and it's less than the ochel. Technically, according to Beit Hillel, you're allowed to take out the psolet from the ochel. He said you're permitted. And here it's less than the ochel. So you would assume you take it out. The answer is no, don't do it. Because since the psolet is so fine, it would take more effort to remove the psolet than it does to remove the ochel. So Beit Hillel will agree, do like Beit Shammai and take out the ochel because you have to exert less effort in order to do it that way. So that's the question at hand. Talking about all cases here where the ochel is in excess of the psolet. Question is, how is it easier to get it out? Which way is easier? Is it easier to take out the psolet because there's less of it? Or is it easier to take out ochel because the psolet is so fine that I can't get it out? And so that is the decision you have to make. Whichever is less tircha to do, that's the way you go. Beit Shammai says you always have to take the ochel out. Whereas Beit Hillel says you make a decision of which takes less effort to do in those cases.
Just the rove?
I'm not sure. Perhaps she says the word rove. I'm not sure if that's what he means. Real literally.
Yeah,
about. Yeah, I would assume that it means more like a supermajority, that you have some sort of sense that this is mostly psolet and you're picking out little pieces of ochel. It's not where it's like close to 50-50, where it's clear that the ochel has some sort of value here and it's not going to be patel to the psolet. Taking past off water should be fine as long as you don't use a colander. The colander is a tool that's used to do large quantities. Maybe a slotted spoon where it's bo rare, but la'achar yad, it's not the normal way that you would do it. Rav Gamliel Omer, af mediach v'sholet, that you're allowed to soak them and float this stuff to the top. Tanya, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok, kachaya min agam shel beit Rav Gamliel. This was the practice of the house of Rabbi Gamliel, which means the house of the Nasi. The practice, shayu mevim dli, malei adashim. They used to bring a bucket full of lentils, mitzifim alav mayim. And then they used to float water into it, meaning pour water in there. Benimtza ochel lamata upsolot amalo. The ochel, the adashim are at the bottom, and the shells used to float, or the loose stuff used to float to the top. Vatanya ipcha, don't we have a bright that says the opposite, which is that the ochel would float, and the bad stuff would sink. Okasha, ha, ba'afra, ha, begile. Depends what type of solet you're talking about. Adashim come with two forms of solet. They come with dirt from being picked out of the ground where they grow. And then number two is they also have chaff on them or shells on them. So when you soak them, the heavier stuff, the dirt, floats to the bottom. And the lighter stuff, the chaff, floats to the top. And the lentils are found in between them. And that's why you have two different brightot or two different statements. One explaining, talking about the chaff, and one talking about the afar. All right, next Mishnah. Beit Shammai Omrim, Ein Mishalchim B'Yom Tov Ela Manot. The only thing you're allowed to send on Yom Tov to your friend is a ready-made dish. Something that can be utilized immediately is unlikely to be left over to the next day because it's so ready. Beit Shammai Omrim, Mishalchim B'Heim HaChaya Ba'Of. You can send animals not prepared at all. Ben chayin, ben shchutin, whether they're alive or they're shechted. So they're unready in different states. One of them is not even shechted. The other one is shechted, but it's still not cooked. Mishalchin, yenot, shmanim, v'siltot. You can send wine, oil, and flour. Vikitniot, and legumes. Avalot vua. You can't send grains. Fred, there's the answer to your question. You can't send grains because you can't mill the grains on Yom Tov in order to make them. So therefore, sending them the grain is worthless. Rabbi Shimon Amatir B'tzvua. Rabbi Shimon says you can't send them grains. The Gemara explained why he thinks you can send them grains. The Gemara says, Tani Rabbi Chiyo Ubuvad Shalo Yasene B'shura. If he sends them any of these materials, he shouldn't make it into a big to-do. He shouldn't make it a public display. Shura means that there's a company of people that are taking it. Don't send over a large number of people with the gift because that makes it into a big deal. Tana, Ein Shura P'chuta Mishlosha B'nei Adam. That means don't send more than three people bearing the gift, because that makes it a public issue. You send it with one, maybe two people, that's fine. By Rav Ashi, Talata Gavri v'Talata Mine Mai. If you have three different people carrying three different dishes, what's the din? Is the problem that you have three people? Or is it because three people with one dish is the problem, but each one of them is a separate dish? It's as if each of them is coming independently, even though they're coming together, teiku, unresolved issue. Rabbi Shimon Matir B'Tvua. Rabbi Shimon says you're allowed to give grains in their stalk. We call it raw grain you can give to him. Tanya, Rabbi Shimon Matir B'Tvua, Kigon. Chitin lasot mehem ludiot. Because you can give him wheat kernels, because you can make with them ludiot. Rashi explains that ludiot is some sort of ma'achal chitim, some sort of food that you make with the wheat kernels that don't require you to mill them. That you're able to boil them up and not to mill them, that'd be fine. Other translations are ludiot are gladiators. It was the special diet of the gladiators, and they used to eat it like today, where they eat raw eggs and those types of things for those people that are training. They ate the raw wheat kernels, cooked without milling them. That was part of their special diet. Se'orim, you can give them barley, because liten lifnei be'emto, to put in front of his animal, because they'll eat the raw barley seeds. Adashim, lasot mehem mitzisin. And then we can have lentils to make groats from them. So these items are all things that do not require milling. You can make them without milling them. And therefore you can grant them. That's what Rabbi Shimon says. There are dishes that can be made without milling. And since milling is restricted, that's why the Tanakhama says don't do it. But nevertheless, what we have here is, yes, you can do it because there are dishes, according to Rabbi Shimon, that can be made without doing the milling. And that's why he permits giving those types of items. Even though that may not be the most common usage, nevertheless, since there is such a usage, you may gift them on Yom Tov. And that all has to do with the fact that we generally require you to have some sort of tzorach Yom Tov in that which you're doing. If you're going to do a malacha like hotza'ah, to take things over to your friend and to give something to the friend, it has to have some semblance of tzorach Yom Tov or simchat Yom Tov associated with it.
Now, is it the requirement of the person?
That's what the difference between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Beit Shammai says it must be usable in its current state, otherwise you can't give it. But here, the Beit Hillel says you have anything you want as long as it could be used on Yom Tov, not that necessarily has to be used on Yom Tov. It's like Shalaf Manot, right? Same Chakira. Does the person have to eat it, or the receiving it is what brings the Simchat to Yom Tov? Alright. Meshalchim Kelim Ben Tfurim Ben Shenen Tfurim. One can send over clothing or garments, whether they are stitched or unstitched. Bavavishesh Ben Kilayim. Even if they have Kilayim in them, which would preclude them from being worn, nevertheless you can send them. Behein Letzarech HaMoed. If it's necessary for the Yom Tov, meaning that something can be used on Yom Tov, again, the alternative Girsa, is Avabisha in the Tzorach HaMoed, even though they're not for the Tzorach HaMoed. Avalo Sandala Misumar, one cannot send over a wooden sandal. This is based on the Mishnah in Shabbat, which restricts one from wearing wooden sandals, where the sole is made out of wood and the top is made out of leather. It's Maisa Shehayo there that they trampled each other, the nails caused a lot of damage. So they restricted it on Shabbat and Yom Tov, because that's when the Maisa happened. So that's a outlier type of Zerah, nothing to do with necessarily Yom Tov or Shabbat itself. One can't send that over, because one can't wear it. But Min Al-Sheinu Tafur, you can't send over a shoe that is yet to be stitched, because it's worthless, you can't use it, there's nothing you can do with it. Yudamir Aflo Min Al-Lavan, can't send over a shoe that is white. Neshetzarech Uman, because he has to be blackened. If you're not going to wear the shoe when it's white, until it's been blackened, then you can't send it over because it's not going to be utilized unless you blacken it, which can't be done on Yom Tov. Zeklam, kol shene otim bo biyom tov mishalchin ota. Anything that you can benefit from on Yom Tov, then you can send it. So again, the idea here is in potential. As long as it can be utilized, you're allowed to send it. Doesn't mean he has to utilize it. Because as we said before, even though it's not the Tzorach HaMoed, even though he doesn't need it now, as long as he has the ability to utilize it now, that's sufficient reason to allow you to send it. The Megillah says, Bishlamot furim pazudam albush. All right, stitched clothing or garments, I understand what you could do with it. You can wear it. Sheinan furim nami chazi lechsuye. Those that are unstitched can be used as a blanket or as a sheet. So that's fine as well. Ela kilayim namai chazu. What are you going to do with kilayim? Why are kilayim permitted to be sent? What are you going to do with them? V'chitei mochazu lemeimach tutei. You would think that they're good to be folded under him. Instead of wearing them, because it says you're not allowed to wear kilayim, so maybe wearing them is impermissible, but putting them under you to sit on them would be fine. V'hatanya, lo yale alecha, aval ata yechol latziyo tachtecha. You may not wear kilayim, but you can spread it under you. Aval amiru chachamim asu lasot kein. Even though it's mutar min doraita, midrabanan it's asur, shema tichroch lo nima al b'saro. Because maybe one of the strings will roll over onto him. And that when you sit on something that is soft, that is made out of kilayim, it can fold over onto you. Strings, as she talks about whether this is a large string, an unusually large string, or it's normal strings, but there is the ability of the item to fold onto you and be like you're wearing it when you have something that's under you. So that's why the Chachamim say don't do that. So just stick something intervening between you. Put some other item between you so you won't have that problem. From Rabbi Shimon Pazi, I'm Rabbi Shimon ben Levi, I'm Rabbi Yossi ben Shaul, I'm a Rabbi, Mishum Kahala Kadisha, the Yerushalayim, the Holy Congregation of Yerushalayim, Afilu Eser Mitzaot, Zu Agav Zu. If you have 10 mattresses or blankets or spreads under you, Vikilayim Tachteyem, and you put them on the bottom, Asur Lishan Aleyem. Can't lay on them. So even if you have 10 mattresses or 10 comforters that you're laying on top of it, even with the separation, that restriction to Rabbanan still exists. And we don't allow you to sit on top of Kilayim. So now we're back to square one is, what are you doing with kilayim on Yom Tov? And it says, Ela b'vilon, be used as a curtain or a separator in the room. Because there you're not wearing it, but it does have some sort of benefit or utility on Yom Tov. Why do people say that a vilon is mikabel tuma? It's not clothing, it's not a kli, it's simply like the wall of your house. Why should it be mikabel tuma? Nesha shamash mitchamem kenegdo. Because sometimes the servant or the waiter warms himself up. When he's a little cold, he wraps the vilon around himself to warm himself up. If that's the case, you're back to, again, square one, because you can't hang up a kilayim vilon, because why is it tamei, a vilon? Because the shamash wraps himself in it. If the shamash wraps himself in it, you better not put up kilayim, because he's going to end up wrapping himself up in kilayim. So when I say a little bit kashin, it's a case where it's hard. It's not soft. So it's not pleasurable to wrap yourself in these items. Equivalent of whether it's sackcloth, which is very rough, or even sometimes linen, which has a very uncomfortable feeling against the body. It's very kashe. V'chiha da'amar ravuna braid rav Yeshua. Hainamto gamdo. These coarse pieces of felt, dinar sharya, are mutarim. Because, as Rashi says over here, these are items that are kashe. They're very hard. And so one doesn't get that nice feeling or that sensation of pleasure from wrapping themselves in it. And therefore it is permissible, there's no problem of kilayim. Amar Rav Papa, ardalin ein bayam mishum kilayim. Loosely translated, these are slippers. Do not have a din of kilayim, the way Rashi describes them. He saw in the Chubat Agonim, shirigilim lalavasham tachem min aleihem. Tulin aleihem, or shel tayashim, they wrapped them up in some sort of leather. Abdim tachem karkiyatam, kenegeda ekev shel aregel. By the heel, the yeshusimotam shel tzemer. Some people make them out of wool, but parimotam namte. These are some form or ardalin, right? Some sort of slipper that one wears, but because the material is very hard, it's not a problem of kilayim. Amarova, hanet srare de pshite. The purses or money pouches that hold the coins in them, ein bahem mishum kilayim. Don't have a problem with kilayim, even when you wear them against your body, because the coins rub against the material and make it very coarse. And therefore, again, it doesn't have that sensation of soft clothing against your body. To bizrani, those that hold seeds, yesh bahem mishum kilayim, are problematic. But seeds, and to them, the seeds don't cause the material to roughen and become coarse, and therefore, they're still pleasurable to wear them around your neck, if you're wearing this money pouch around your neck, and it rubs against your body. Ramashi amar, echad zeh ve'echad zeh bahem mishum kilayim, neither one of them has a din of kilayim, fi she'ein derech chimum bekach. That when one wears the money pouch hanging around his neck, he's not wearing it to warm himself up. He's not wearing it for the pleasure of it rubbing against his body. It's because he wants to store the seeds or the money in that way. And therefore, just because it comes into contact with your body doesn't mean that it's a problem of kilayim. Now, Tosafot here discusses, once it is kasher, it doesn't have a din of kilayim. What does that mean? Does that mean that there's no longer a din of kilayim? And the way Rashi seems to phrase it, you can then sit on them. Because they're not mitchameim, you can sit on them. Why did Rashi say sit on them? Why didn't he say that you could put them on at that point? The Tosfot wants to be medayek, that when you have things that are materials that are hard or coarse, one may not wear them. If they're made out of kilayim, you can't wear them like a regular beged. What you can do is sit on them. That din derabanan of sitting on them, which precluded you from sitting on kilayim, is waived when the objects are coarse. Because then you're dealing with like a two-step process. Because you have a din derabanan already that maybe it'll fold up on you. And here, because they're hard, therefore, they're not comfortable, and we wouldn't suspect or we wouldn't worry about it rubbing up against you. All right, so that's one way that Tosfot explains it, but then he backs away from that and says, V'lin nira desharya mashmi afilu lubosh. Against Rashi, he says, I say when it's mutar legamre. You can wear this kilayim. I go, wait a minute, what do you mean? By big day kuhuna, we say that the kohanim can't wear their big day kuhuna except they're in their avoda because there's kilayim in them. But big day kuhuna are made out of linen. Linen is that coarse material. So why do we have a problem of kilayim at all with them wearing the big day kuhuna? So here Tosafot makes a different differentiation, which is, depends how it's made. In order to be kilayim, you have to have shua, tevi, and nos. The whole process has to be done together. The wool and linen have to be processed all the way through together, and it has to be fully processed in order to be kilayim. So in a case where it's kilayim de oraita, then kashim won't help you. The fact that it's hard won't help you to be able to wear it. Where it's only kilayim mizrabanan, which means it's either not fully processed, or a case like here, namta by felt, which doesn't go through the full processing, then if it's kashim, you can even wear it. So basically what he does is creates the derabanan in a different way. Rashi created the derabanan by saying you're sitting on it instead of wearing it. And therefore there was the dispensation to have the coarse material. Tosafot says, well, I can create the derabanan by saying the way that it was processed is derabanan makes the kilayim derabanan versus kilayim doraita. And if it's kilayim derabanan, you can wear it. Because it's coarse. If it's kilayim d'oraita, then you can't wear it because it's coarse. Now that might also relate to machloket Rashi and Tosafot, not here, but in other places as to how process, how many of the stages have to be done together in order to be a violation d'oraita. Here, Tosafot says you need all three processes in order to be d'oraita. Other places in Shas, Rashi and Tosafot argue about that, how many of the processes actually have to be done in order to be in the violation d'oraita, and that might lead to why Rashi's opinion over here is talking about sitting on it rather than wearing it. Okay, we'll stop over here. Well.